Welcome to the Broadband Bunch, a podcast about broadband and how it impacts all of us. Join us to learn about the state of the industry and the latest innovations and trends. Connect with the thought leaders, pioneers, and policymakers helping to shape your future through broadband. Join us on Facebook at The Broadband Bunch and see the latest episodes, news, and photos. The Broadband Bunch, as always, sponsored by ETI Software. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Broadband Bunch. I'm Craig Corbin. Thanks so much for joining us today. Cloud-native architecture, the focus of how to optimize system architectures utilizing the unique capabilities of the cloud. Our guests today are at the heart of pioneering efforts to allow construction of networks with cloud-native agility at carrier scale and at much lower cost. RT Brick has pioneered carrier routing software capable of running on off-the-shelf hardware by applying hyperscale design principles to provide unprecedented scalability. Joining the Broadband Bunch with more than two decades of expertise in engineering with Alcatel, now Nokia Networks, and Juniper Networks, the founder and CTO of RT Brick, Hannes Gredler, and alongside Hannes, bringing a specialization in the intercept between technology and communications, the Vice President of Marketing at RT Brick, Richard Brandon. Hannes, Richard, welcome to the Broadband Bunch.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you, Craig, for having me.
Absolutely. It's exciting to talk about what's going on in the advancements that are being made today at light speed, seemingly. Before we get started, for those who might not be familiar how RT Brick came about, guys, give us an overview.
Well, where should I start? We have been working, both Richard, myself, my co-founder Praveen Bandekar, we have been working at a large router vendor in previous life. And we started to see a little bit of changing buying patterns back in 2013, 2014, particularly with the hyperscalers. So a whole lot of the large hyperscalers started to procure their own equipment from Taiwan, augmented them with their own homegrown networking stacks. And the goal was actually to get a competitive edge in the cost and also fix some of their time-to-market issues that they had with their own product. And Praveen, who was my product manager, just used to ask, "Hey, Hannes, when do you think that wave is going to spill over to traditional telecommunication operators?"
You know, that's when you talk about disruptive change, that's the concept that brings about tremendous opportunity in any industry. But certainly when we talk about the telco space, and, you know, as I understand it, the idea was the approach to rebuild a software stack from scratch. And that concept to me is mind-boggling. Talk about how you approached it.
Well, I mean, once you get to maintain, I would say, a multiple decade old networking stack, you start a little bit the cracks here. It is software in total, doesn't really age very well. So usually at 7, 15, even, you know, 30-year-old software stacks, you have to put in almost an exponential amount of money and time to constantly put it on life support. And part of that problem is rooted in the fact that this piece of traditional software stacks are very optimized to certain hardware, which is, of course, very troublesome for porting it to new hardware, to portability in total. So we said, look, whenever we have the opportunity to build something from scratch, let's really have that having portability in mind. It doesn't really matter where we want to run it, whether we want to run it on a server, on an x86 CPU, on a bare metal switch, or even on a smart NIC, right? Your design has to be with having portability and modularity as a first principle.
Right. And Richard, from your perspective in watching this development, what's been your impression?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Hannah said, that kind of divorce from hardware and software all being together in this monolithic system is pretty revolutionary. I think, you know, telcos perhaps started building out internet networks maybe about 25 years ago, and really nothing's changed. So, the chassis have got faster, the line cards have got faster. But, you know, if you look at an early monolithic routing system from 25 years ago, it really looks pretty much like the ones you can get today. So this is the first huge shift really we've seen in technology in that time frame.
You look at what has traditionally been a very long cycle of release, you know, on average 18 months when we are talking about this industry. And I'm curious about how that design process started, Hannes, in order to get yourself to a position to be able to roll out features within the order of days instead of months. Talk about that, if you would.
Again, if you go back and take a look at some of more of those traditional code bases, one thing really becomes obvious. There is a lot of copy and paste code, right? So all the state maintenance code, routing protocols, drivers, programming chips, it's usually a transactional model. There is private databases, private data structures that are going to get manipulated. And then the flow of events starts on. Now, if you look at how those private databases, they're all being encoded using, I would say, handcrafted C code, right? Common library functions. There was no sort of abstraction that it is normal to web app developers, which have a clear separation between front-end, back-end. The back-ends are proper designed databases with well-known schemas. Based on those databases, you can almost derive all the plugin access code. You can auto-generate documentation. So we were really looking for that schema-driven database driven paradigm first. That was the basis how we started.
Right. And guys, I know that in any advance like this, sometimes there can be a struggle of sorts between guys on the networking side of things looking to protect status quo, or the IT guys looking to get things into production more quickly. In this case, Hannes, who's going to win?
Well, we had initially placed our bets, right? And we clearly literally almost have put the farm on, bet the farm on IT guys, right? Because what they had to offer in terms of automation, in terms of an IT-ified workflow, that was clearly superior, and also taking the cloud world by storm. But still, when we shipped our first flavor of our product, we had this nice backstore, everything accessible using APIs. But still, we had to pass through the qualification stage of the networking guys, right? And now you have this lab guy, and he says, "Hey, yeah, this is all looking great, but where's my CLI?" Right. So we had to actually then go back and say, we have to really make this as a bridging technology and bridging the tomorrow, which is everything fully API-ified, but still not really losing the traditional operators, the traditional router jockeys who are just used to their standard CLI, to their standard Yang models and all of that.
You're listening to The Broadband Bunch. We're visiting with Hannes Gredler, the founder and CTO of RT Brick, alongside Hannes, the Vice President of Marketing, Richard Brandon. And Richard, I'm curious, when we talk about Hannes mentioning a moment ago when things initially were rolled out, what was the initial reception to the concept from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, one thing that's perhaps a bit surprising, you know, when we're dealing with large tier one carriers and telcos, is there is a fantastic appetite for this stuff. You know, there's not, we're not going into a space here where people are sort of skeptical. They do see that doing things the way the hyperscalers did things is their end game. So yes, it's new for them, and there's challenges with that. Of course, there is, but there's a massive amount of interest, and as I say, an appetite to adopt it. To the point that, really, quite surprisingly for me, there's been a bunch of carriers who have recently put together a joint paper, which is really unusual in this industry, and that's they include Deutsche Telekom, BT in the UK, Vodafone, and Telefonica. So huge international carriers all kind of combining and putting together a joint paper, essentially saying this is the kind of way that they want to run their broadband networks. It's calling for what they term an open BNG, which is essentially software running on their own choice of hardware, as Hannah said earlier, something they can source from a, you know, Taiwanese vendor, high performance, low cost hardware, or possibly even running it on NIC cards or x86 in smaller instances.
How intriguing, Hannes, too, the paper that Richard just mentioned. It's a shame that you couldn't find any bigger players in the industry to come together on a joint effort for this paper. That's amazing. You know, from your perspective, talk about having players of that scale looking for exactly what you're doing.
Well, let me perhaps go a little bit back how the OpenBNG paper really was conceived, right? And let me admit, there has been a fairly deal of trial and error, right? Starting 2016, Deutsche Telekom originally started out with the CORD initiative, which is central office re-architected as a data center. And that was actually, as a prototype, really great, except it only had limited scale, right? And this is where Artibrick has really entered the stage at DTE. And they've asked us, look, how can we scale this kind of technology to, let's say, one of our largest central offices where we have potentially 100,000 of subscribers being terminated today on a BNG? And we said, okay, then you probably need to deviate a little bit from that idea to that central idea from CORD that you are micromanaging your forwarding plane. We probably do have to do a bit more divide and conquer, where certain parts of the forwarding state is being managed by the underlay traditional routing protocols, and a certain amount, particularly service-related information, is really coming from your controller, right? And that blending of the two layers has really done the trick for us, right? So it started out with a big SDN micromanagement confusion, and ultimately has evolved into, hey, we have to blend the SDN layer with the traditional routing layer.
And as I understand it, Hannes, one of the fundamental differences is that now providers are no longer buying software from the hardware networking vendor. You've sort of unlinked those two worlds. Talk about that.
Yeah, that is how our central business model really operates. We say, look, please, the dear network operator, you procure your hardware from that, you know, one out of half a dozen Taiwan-based OEMs, where there is already healthy competition, and there in the future is even more healthy competition because you have donated the OpenBNG specification to the Open Compute project, right? But what we are now doing in addition is we standardize certain software models, right? And make sure that in the future, you're also going to have some variety and some choice for this operating stack for the software that all drives of that. that was, I would say, the technological marketplace problem. What we found a bit interesting is when we actually were sealing that intent into contract, the entire contractual framework of telcos are not really, have not really been there yet, right? So this was basically, I would say, a recollection of the past 20 years of RFQs and experience. And now where you have sort of sourced everything from a single neck to grab, and now then transitioning it over for this aggregation where you source hardware from vendor A and software from vendor B, that required a really complete overhaul of those contractual frameworks.
Now, there was a lot of excitement, guys, earlier this year. And Richard, I think in late January, the press release that Deutsche Telekom had connected their first live customer to its disaggregated broadband network using routing software from Arhibrick. And that had to be a big day for the organization. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big day, obviously, for us, but... I think, you know, even beyond Deutsche Telekom, I think there's been a lot of people sort of waiting for this to happen at the sort of scale that, you know, you've got a Deutsche Telekom. I think they have about 20 million broadband subscribers. So to see that kind of for real, I think the first customer went live just before Christmas. So, see a real kind of household connected to, I think there's a 1 gig broadband service. At thinking that that first routing layer that hit there is running on bare metal switches with independent software, it's pretty exciting. To, you know, you think that they're sitting there watching their Christmas movies over what's going to be a radically new architecture. We've seen obviously a lot of interest from other carriers as well as Deutsche Telekom in that project.
Obviously, when we talk about, you know, connecting live customers, that's the success, the culmination of efforts to a certain degree. Didn't happen overnight. And Hannes, I'm curious about, what the initial thought process was for how long it would take, and then B, how long it did take.
Oh, Craig, you're touching a very painful topic now.
Sorry.
Originally, I told my early seed investors, hey, look, we know how to build this, right? 2 years and we are done, right? Well, it turns out that 2 years have actually turned into four. So doing the stack from ground up is certainly one thing, but also ensuring that its telemetry layer integrates nicely with whatever the customer has been deployed, making sure that the command line interfaces displays all the information that maybe command line interfaces of other vendors all show. So all that tiny little tinkering and adaptation, well, that took a whole lot of our time. And let me also say here, I was really, and still are, we are tremendously grateful for Deutsche Telekom, who has really put in all in, right? They gave us access to their central network qualification labs, to their best engineers who had run all the cruel tests to penetrate the software and really make sure that it operates good even under boundary conditions. So that technology partnership has really paid off. And I have to say, as a startup, if you don't really have a large lighthouse customers like this, it's probably going to take you much longer until you have your networking and routing stack in a decent form and shape.
No question about it. As I understand, there was a unique way of approaching this, utilizing the concept of reverse engineering, the approach taken many times in the automotive industry, backing into the final product. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
I mean, what was actually very different this time from the A4 project team, and it was not really, I would say, a pure engineering team who is making the decisions. It was actually a multi-disciplinary team with people coming from finance, cost engineers, but also, of course, engineers. And one of the competencies that the cost engineers was doing is they have done things which are normal in the automotive industry for really assessing what is the value of a certain part, right? They completely knock it down, disassemble it, look what kind of material, what kind of technologies they have put in, and then independently try to come up with an estimate what such a unit does cost on the world market. And they have applied the very same methodology here with networking switches, right? They said, okay, here there's perhaps this little Intel CPU in there, DRAM from vendor X, well, PCB board design, two power supplies, six fans, a certain Broadcom chip on there. So the cost of goods, the bill of material is roughly $2,000 for that kind of box, right? And now really tell me, why do you want to charge me $7,000, right? And they have really started the whole cost engineering purchasing process with that true cost of hardware as their central linchpin.
And if I just sort of pick up on that as well, I think, you know, one of those things that only comes out of this disaggregation of hardware and software, because traditionally when you buy these things linked together, you know the value of the hardware, the cost of that hardware, it's not transparent to you as a buyer,
right?
Because it, you know, the software comes included, which you need, and so being able to disaggregate those two gives you a much greater opportunity to see the transparency of your cost base, and as Hannah says, you know, you can optimize a particular hardware platform for your network, how much memory it might mean,
no doubt,
what kind of buffers it might need, and so on. And then the software is an independent conversation from that.
And no doubt that as with any major change, especially when seemingly a quantum leap is being taken, there are those that will be more readily willing to accept the change, some that are a bit more skeptical, and it takes a little bit of encouragement to move out of the comfort zone. Hannes, from your perspective, what's the biggest challenge there?
I would say the biggest challenge from the customer side is that, I mean, it's not just doing a drop-in replacement, right? Here goes your chassis-based switch, and there's a drop-in replacement using a stack of bare metal hardware. Usually what changes is also how you operationalize and operate that network, right? Usually your networking engineers do not just be the traditional router jockey type of qualification. They need to know how to operate virtual environments. What is in a container, right? What is some of those tool chains, Elasticsearch for evaluating lock chains and things like that. So they really need to have a bit of an affinity on the IT side of things. So with a pure networking skill set, that challenge cannot really be mastered. That's also what I tell, by the way, also our own development engineers, do not just focus on being good at mastering a certain protocol, BGP or ISIS, always have a look at what is going on the IT side of things, right? Mm-hmm. Automation using Ansible, test frameworks like Robot. You have to be good at both. Please add both sides to your talent stack.
Absolutely. And as we begin to wind down, Richard, first to you, biggest impact for providers for the work that's been done there at Arctic Brick?
I think, I mean, the obvious kind of, you know, first thing to latch onto would be cost, because suddenly you're getting this access to this hardware base, which is, you know, very competitive. And, you know, it's a door opener straight away when you turn around and you say, this is going to cost you less than 50% of the old way of doing stuff. But I think the bigger thing for them at the end of the day is flexibility of not being constrained by the services that come from their hardware vendor. And up until now, they've, you know, once you make those huge commitments and putting in these big chassis-based systems, you're going to have to keep running those for 5, 7, even 10 years. And that means you can only offer the services that come from that same hardware vendor. And I think divorcing those two things is massive for them, because it means they can take control of their own destiny from their service portfolio to their subscribers.
Right. And Hannes, to you, last question. We always wish, in looking back, hindsight, 2020, I'll ask you the back to the future question. If you could take yourself back to when the process initially began and could whisper in your own ear something, some little tidbit of knowledge and wisdom, what would that have been? Would there have been a direction you could have taken perhaps more quickly?
Yeah, that's a good one. Basically, there is one RFC that was originally intended as an April 1st RFC called RFC 1925, the 12 Fundamental Networking Truths. And we like that one so much that we actually have put a nicely designed poster out of that and put it to our website for download. It contains 12 eternal wisdoms. And despite having it in front of our face, we were running in some of the mistakes that the RFC makes really fun around. And one thing that I have learned also is that particularly rule number 10, one size doesn't fit all, right? So whenever we tried to address multiple problems with just one software component, we were almost setting ourselves up for failure. So I'd rather learn a bit small is beautiful, but have different small self-confined modules and be really better at you know, composing them together rather than trying to reutilize at all costs. So modularity has a price as well. It in itself is not really an end goal.
Very good. Hannes, Richard, so exciting to see what has been done, to look at the impact on the industry, and can't wait to be able to circle back and visit with both of you again down the line. I know that there is much excitement with what's going on with Deutsche Telekom and other providers around the world, and absolutely wish all the best as the efforts continue to evolve. Thanks so much for being with us on the Broadband Bunch. I hope you guys had fun this morning.
Yeah, it was good. Thanks for your time. We really enjoyed it.
Absolutely, Craig.
Very good. Hannes, Richard, that's going to wrap things up, and we thank everyone for allowing us to be part of your day. We'll see you next time right here on the Broadband Bunch. So long, everyone.